Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is September the 3rd, and we are continuing in Parashas Kedoshim. And I see Mrs. Kaiser has made sure that we're up to speed where we are. So we're up to Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. Pasuk says, Lo tignovu, do not steal. Velo sechachashu, do not deny. Velo sechakru ishvam, so do not lie one man to his fellow. So, I'm sorry, page 658. I'm sorry, I forgot to announce the page number. 658. I'll read that again. Yeah. Okay, here we go again. Verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Lo tignovu, do not steal. Velo sechachashu, do not deny. Velo sechakru ish bamiso, and do not lie one man to his fellow. Now, in the Aseret Hadibros, in the Ten Commandments, it says lo signov, do not steal, but over there it's talking about kidnapping. It's not talking about stealing items. This pasuk is talking about stealing items. So lo tignovu, this is the source for do not steal items. And do not deny, meaning that if someone accuses a person of having stolen, if the accusation is true, do not deny. And then do not lie in court, one man to his fellow. And as the next pasuk says, v'los yishavu v'yishmi la'shaker, do not swear by my name falsely. And you will profane the name of your God. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. As Rashi says, these two psukim are a progression. Do not steal, because if one steals, they will come to deny. If they come to deny, they will come to lie. If they come to lie, they will come to swear falsely. So one avera leads to another avera, as a person tries to cover up their first wrongdoing, it gets worse and worse and worse. So one avera leads to another avera. Hashem has set it up this way that an avera leads to an avera. The system Hashem set up, Hashem could have just said, don't steal. And then if a person would steal and then lie about it and swear falsely about it, there would be no other averos. But that's not the way Hashem set up the system. Hashem set up the system that there is a domino effect, that one avera leads to another avera. That is a natural order in the world we live, that one avera leads to another avera. Similarly, mitzvah goreres mitzvah, one mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. It's not happenstance. That's the system Hashem set up, that a mitzvah will bring about another mitzvah, whereas an avera will bring about another avera, meaning it will bring about an opportunity for another avera. One avera brings about an opportunity for another avera. One mitzvah brings about the opportunity for another mitzvah. This is the natural course of events in the way Hashem set up the world. It is also part of the reward and the punishment for having done the mitzvah or the avera. Person does a mitzvah, they are rewarded with another opportunity to do a mitzvah. Person does an avera, God forbid, then they are punished with another opportunity to do an avera. Or you can look at it a little differently, that if they do an avera, God forbid, then they are given another opportunity to correct themselves, which means that if a person did the first avera, they're now faced with a more difficult challenge. But if they rise to the occasion, they can thereby correct the previous avera. So a person steals, which is bad. Now they are accused of having stolen. So what are they going to do? So here, a person is given a more difficult challenge. It's hard to own up to having done something wrong. To not steal in the first place, haven't done anything wrong yet. So a person could try to do that. But once they've actually stolen, to own up to it, that's difficult. And then if they do deny it, and they go to court, and now they're asked again, and they have to lie, it's hard to own up. And then they're told to swear. It's hard. It gets harder and harder. But if at any point a person is able to check themselves and say, I did it. I made a mistake. I was wrong. I did it. It's embarrassing, but it becomes the tikkun, it becomes the way of correcting that which was done wrong. It's the road to recovery is to stop oneself in that process of avero goreres avero. One sin brings about another opportunity for sin. Pasuk Yigamot 13. Lo sashokis reacha. Do not. Looking for the word translation. Sashok, cheat. Yeah. Do not cheat your friend. Velo sigzol. And do not steal. Another word for steal. Lo salin pulas sochir itcha ad boker. Do not have the wages of a worker stay overnight with you until the morning. Now, lo sashok, do not cheat, is specifically referring to withholding the wages of somebody. Now, there's various types of wages. You have a sahir, as is mentioned later in the pasuk. A sahir is a daily worker, an hourly worker, someone who works and is paid, and they find another job. So, someone comes and knocks on your door and says, "Can I mow the lawn?" That's a sahir. Said, "Give me some money to mow your lawn." You agree? They're going to mow your lawn. That is a sahir. They're not working. They're not salaried by you. They're going to take a job. It's going to take an hour or 2 hours. When they're done, you're going to pay them. That's a sahir. If we were living in a different climate, person knocks on your door and says, "I'll shovel your walk." So same thing. So that's a sahir. In that case, we have a specific law at the end of the pasuk of lo salin pulas sachir itcha ad boker. Do not have the wages of the sachir remain with you overnight until morning. Meaning, if someone works for you during the day, you are obligated to pay them by the next morning. The Torah gives you another 12 hours to find money. If you don't have cash on hand to pay the worker, you have the nighttime hours to find the cash. But by the time the sun comes up, you have to have paid the worker. The first part of the pasuk, lo sashok, do not cheat, which is also referring to withholding wages, that could be any type of worker, a salaried worker, any type of person for whom that has worked for you and for whom you now owe money. If a person withholds that money, they cheat the person, they say to the person, "Oh, you never worked for me, I don't owe you any money." That would be oshek. Oshek is to hold back the wages, to cheat the person, to say they didn't really work for you, to tamper with the time clock, those sorts of things. That is oshek. That's to hold back the wages. But the end of the pasuk is where you intend to pay, but you're late. So the Torah says specifically, one only has 12 hours to produce the money. If the person is a nighttime worker, so then the Torah gives you the daytime to find money. But by the time the sun goes down, you have to have paid the worker. Now this actually comes up for us, and it's something which a person might transgress inadvertently. We don't realize the severity of it. It's a Torah law. You hire a babysitter, and the babysitter works for a few hours. Now you owe money, and you're ready to pay. "I don't have any cash on me. I'll have to get some cash. I'll get it for you tomorrow." So the babysitter goes home. It's an evening job. The babysitter goes home. So you have tomorrow to produce the money. But if the person goes to work, comes home, and then gets the cash and pays the babysitter, it's after nightfall. They've transgressed. Took too long to pay. So it's important that when somebody takes a job with us, that we have the money on hand to pay. And if we don't, then we have a plan on how we're going to get that money quickly to pay the worker. Now, the employee can forego the right. Meaning, if you say to the person who just mowed your lawn, "I don't have any cash on me, and I can't get any cash until tomorrow. Do you mind?" If the worker wholeheartedly says, "It's fine, don't worry about it," then you're all right. They can be meichel. They could forego it. But the worker is not required to forego it. And if the worker says that, "I'm sorry, I need the money now," you have, as the Torah says, you have the 12-hour period following the one that they worked for you. And if you can't find any cash, you have to borrow money to pay them. Yeah?
Could you say, like, before they start working, I won't be able to get money to you till Friday? you know, to make that commitment to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, if they agree up front, then that would also work. That's a way of foregoing it.
And like before they work, so...
Yeah, yeah, that works.
No IOU?
If they agree to it. If they agree to it, okay. The IOU is okay. But they have to agree. They have the right to demand the money.
But if you employ, like we have someone that certain times, certain amount of times a month they come and do things, but we only pay...
At the end of the month.
Yeah.
Right, so that is a prearranged... A prearranged deal. That's fine. They've agreed to that. That it's you're going
to
pay monthly.
The key to everything.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But where there's no agreed upon deal, the assumption is you're going to pay that day or within the 12 hours following, and you got to. It is a mitzvah in the Torah and an avera natu. A person has to be careful to make sure that there's an arrangement made. Most of the time, people will say it's okay. You can pay me later, but you got to go through the motions of talking it out because the Torah requires that the money be paid quickly. So that's the first and the last. There's three mitzvahs in this pasuk. The first one is about withholding wages in general, cheating the employee. The third one is about paying late. The middle one, lo sigzol, do not steal, which seems redundant because we just had in pasuk Yud Aleph in 11, we had lo tignovu, don't steal. And here it says lo sigzol. So here we have the difference between geneva and gizela. Both mean to steal. However, geneva means to steal. I do not know the proper English terminology for them. Geneva means to steal in a sneaky way, where a person doesn't see you do it. And gizela means to steal in a way they do see you do it. So if you snatch somebody's purse and run away, that's gizela. That's open. It's openly. If you sneak into their house in the middle of the night and find their money and run away and nobody sees you, that's geneva. Geneva is to be done, again, I don't know, burglary, I'm not sure how you, I don't know the technical terms in English for what's a sneaky stealing and what is an open stealing. I'm not sure which is which. But geneva means to do it sneakily, if that's a word, sneak in a sneaky way. Huh? And gizela is to do it in an open way. What's that?
What? I don't know, burglar. Does that? I don't know. I don't have the definition in front of me, but it seems like to me if you say it's a burglar,
it's sneaky. Yeah, it sounds that way, right? Yeah.
They translate the gizela as rob.
To rob.
Versus steal.
Steal. Okay, yeah. I don't know if there's a
A robber versus a burglar. Okay. There is a difference.
So a pickpocket, if it's done without the person knowing it, is geneva. Even though it's in the open,
but
they don't see you. They don't know you're doing it. Right, that would be geneva. The Gemara tells us that a ganav, one who steals in a sneaky way, in a certain way is worse than a gazlan. A gazlan is the one who openly steals. You would think the gazlan is more brazen. Just to go and steal, it's a terrible thing. But the problem with the ganav is the ganav says, I don't want people to know I'm doing it. I don't mind if Hashem knows I'm doing it, but I mind if people know I'm doing it. The gazlan says, I'm a thief. I'll do whatever I want. I don't care. So in a certain way, the ganav is worse because the ganav is putting people over Hashem. The Gemara tells us when Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was about to die, his students asked for a bracha. They said, Rabbeinu Barchenu, give us a bracha. And he said, I give you a bracha, that the fear of heaven should be on you as great as the fear of man. So they said to the Rebbe, that's it? You're only going to give us a bracha that the fear of heaven should be like the fear of man? I mean, the fear of heaven should be much more than the fear of man. So he said back to him, I'll prove it to you. Because a person goes and says, I'm going to do a sin in private so no one should know. What do you know what should know? Hashem knows. But people don't want other people to know. People are very afraid of their reputation with other people. Halavai, he was telling his students, that you should fear Hashem as much as you fear people. That would be great. If you got that far, you're in good shape. Yes, there's further to go, but that's a great step. If you can fear Hashem as much as you fear people, that's pretty good. So the ganav in a certain way is worse than the gazlan. They're both bad. Stealing is bad no matter what. But the ganav in a way is worse because he's elevating the fear of man over the fear of Hashem.
And that's a word today, a ganav.
Yeah, ganav. Yeah. Right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Pasuk Yudal, verse 14. Lo sikalel cheresh. Do not curse a deaf person. Here the Torah is emphasizing, even though the person is deaf and can't hear you do it. So they don't know that you're cursing them. You're still not allowed to curse them. The cursing is not because they're hearing it and are upset about it. Now, one might have thought, the reason I can't curse somebody is because I make them feel bad. But if they don't know about it, they can't hear, or they're not here, they're someplace else. So there's nothing wrong with cursing them. The Torah says, no. You're not allowed to curse somebody, even though they can't hear. Don't curse them.
Can't just say, don't curse anybody, no matter what?
Well, that's the thing. That is what it's saying. But okay. It's saying even the cheresh, even the deaf person.
Would that fall under Lashon Hara?
Well, Lashon Hara just means evil speech, so it is bad speech, but it's not the same. Now, what we call Lashon Hara, this would not be the same thing. Okay. To curse somebody is to say God should, whatever, should do something bad to the person. V'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, and in front of a blind person, do not put a stumbling block. So that conjures up an image of a blind person and can't see, and then somebody plays a practical joke and puts something in front of them so they'll trip, right? A cruel thing to do. The Torah says you're not allowed to do that. V'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, in front of a blind person, do not put a stumbling block. V'yareisa me'elokecha, and fear your God, ani Hashem, I am Hashem. V'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, in front of a blind person, do not put a stumbling block. The Gemara tells us is much broader than the words imply. It includes the following. It includes, in front of someone who doesn't understand, do not give bad advice. That someone comes and says, should I engage in this business deal or should I not? Should I buy this property or should I not? And they don't know any better, and you do, and you're going to give them advice, but you want to give them advice in a way that's going to help you. You have your best interest in mind because they're coming to you and you can take advantage. So if they're purchasing this property would be to my best interest, I'm going to advise them to do it even though it may not be in their best interest. That would be an avera of v'lifnei iver, lo sitein mechshol, in front of a blind person, do not put a stumbling block, because regarding this transaction, they are blind. They don't know. Not knowing, lacking information is a form of blindness. A blind person lacks the information about what is in front of them. They can't see. If a person is coming to you for advice about something and they lack information about that thing, then they are blind when it comes to that endeavor. And therefore, we are obligated in that situation not to put a stumbling block in front of them, but rather to advise them properly. Now, we could make a mistake. That wouldn't be this avera. But to deliberately mislead them would be the avera of v'lifnei iver, lo sitein mechshol, in front of a blind person, do not put a stumbling block. Yes?
Would that also cover something like putting a chocolate fudgy brownie in front of somebody who's trying to diet?
It would not technically include that, because the person does have free will whether they're going to eat the chocolate brownie or not. It's not a nice thing to do. But it wouldn't include this case. Although we are going to talk about averos, which we'll get to in a minute. Yeah.
So to me, this sounds like all of this is denying that Hashem sees.
Okay. So the v'yareisa me'elokecha, ani Hashem, which is the end of the pasuk, you shall fear your God. I am Hashem. We already explained before that when it says v'yareisa me'elokecha, you shall fear your God, often that means this is the type of mitzvah that it's not evident to the onlooker whether you're doing an avera or not. Here, the person asked me for advice. I said, I think it's a good idea, buy the property. Those of you who are listening to me give advice, you don't know whether I'm deliberately trying to get him to stumble or whether I'm sincerely giving him what I think is good advice. You don't know what's going on in my head, but Hashem knows. And that's why the Torah says, V'yareisa me'elokecha, fear your God. Hashem knows whether your intentions are pure or whether you're out only to pad your own pockets. So, V'yareisa me'elokecha, fear Hashem. But the Gemara expands this commandment far beyond what we just said. And the Gemara says that there is an avera, it is an avera, it's a sin, to provide someone else with sin. that the lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol, in front of a blind person, do not put a stumbling block, means that we're not allowed to provide the opportunity for an avera for somebody else. The classic case, which is not really applicable today, although we have plenty of cases that are applicable today, but I want you to know the classic case. The classic case is somebody is a nazir. There's a person, your person on a diet. Person is a nazir, which means they're not allowed to drink any wine. They're staying away from wine. And a person hands them a cup of wine. So I didn't pour it down his throat. I didn't make him drink it. I just said, here's a cup of wine. So if he drinks it, I have transgressed v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. I put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. He would not have done this aver without my help. I got him the aver. I provided for him the cup of wine. Now that particular example, although it's the classic case in the Gemara, does not apply to us because we don't have nazir today, but it can apply in many other situations. So you have a person who is, of course, only eating kosher food, and I hand them non-kosher food. So that would be v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. I'm providing for them means to do an avera. That would be v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. Or a person...
I see it as enabling someone.
Enabling, correct. Enabling. And that would apply to other cases as well. Now, I will tell you a case which confounds a lot of people, particularly in our community. It's a difficult situation. Give me a chance to develop it before we get all bent out of shape over it. But a person is not yet religious, does not yet keep Shabbos, and I want to invite them to join me for Shabbos. So I say, would you come for the Shabbos meal on Shabbos day? The only thing is, they live 10 miles away. And in order for them to get to me, they're going to get in their car and drive. So in a certain way, I've enabled an avera. Even though my intentions are good, I want to invite them for a Shabbos meal. In fact, my intentions are to help them keep Shabbos. But my method is a problem because I'm doing it in a way that is enabling them to do an avera. I'm actually asking them to do an avera. I'm saying, please come to my house. We both know full well the only way you can get to my house is by driving. So one has to understand that this is a broad commandment, that we're not allowed to provide averos or enable, that was a good word, enable averos for other people. Now, there are exceptions.
But we can stay in the house overnight and next morning.
Yes.
Yeah. We can stay whole day at home.
Yeah, yeah, we can stay. That's if they come before Shabbos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna explain the details. So now the in order to understand how this works, I have to explain a few things. The Gemara tells us that v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol, not putting a stumbling block in front of a person to enable them to do an avera, only applies in situations where they were unable to enable themselves, and I enable them. So let's take the classic case. The nazir, not allowed to drink wine. He has no wine. And I say, oh, here you go. Here's a cup of wine. So I've provided the avera for him. He couldn't have gotten it otherwise, or he couldn't have gotten it easily without me. However, if there is a cup of wine on the table anyway that he could have had, and I say to him, oh, here's a cup of wine, so I've not really enabled him, because he could have gotten one anyway without me. So since he could have gotten it without me, then it is not a problem of v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol.
Why would you do that? Why would
we're not explaining why a person would do it. We're explaining what would be the law if a person did it. It would be a bad thing to do. So let's take the non-kosher food example. So the person, of course, keeps kosher, and I offer the person a cheeseburger. So that's v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. I'm offering them an avera. But if they could get the cheeseburger without me easily, it's accessible to them. They could easily pick up one just like I could pick up one. So then I have not transgressed v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. So, using this logic, one could argue that in our example of inviting somebody for Shabbos, not before Shabbos, on Shabbos, Shabbos day, I'm asking them to come to my house. And the problem is, in so doing, I am encouraging them to drive on Shabbos, but I'm not providing them the opportunity to drive on Shabbos. They could drive on Shabbos without my invitation. They don't need my invitation to drive on Shabbos. They don't need anything. They can transgress Shabbos without anything that I said. Therefore, one would not transgress this Avera of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol when we invite someone for Shabbos, even though the only way they could get to my house is through driving. It still would not transgress because I'm not providing for them an opportunity that they didn't have anyway. You understand the distinction? If I provide them an opportunity that they wouldn't have had anyway, it would be this Avera. But if it's something they could have done without me, then this Avera does not apply.
But you said that was on Shabbos.
Even on Shabbos.
You could invite them before Shabbos?
Right now I'm saying even on Shabbos you could.
Based on Shabbos.
So far. Okay. But you got to hold on. So far what we're saying is that even though I'm not allowed to provide someone with an Avera, but I could still invite a person to come to my house on Shabbos. Why? Aren't I encouraging them to do an Avera? But they could do it without me. They don't need me. They have plenty of places they could drive without my help. So therefore, it would not be a problem. Now, what if I lent them my car to drive on Shabbos? They don't have a car. So that might be Velif Ne'er Velo Sidei Mishal, because they wouldn't have done it without me. Here, I'm giving them a thing. Here's my car. You can drive over on Shabbos to see me. Well, then I'm providing for them the means to do the Avera. So that already could be a problem. That's obviously an unusual case. But in typical cases, this would not apply because they could drive without my invitation. But we're not done yet. Yes?
We had situations where we used to live that the minions were very small. And we would ask people to come who would drive.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, but we're asking them, that they're doing it for us, even though they can go to any shul since they drive, but we're asking them something specific. So how do we do this? So we asked the Rav, and he said, as long as you offer them an alternative, say, would you like to come, could you come to shul and stay by our house Friday and come to dinner, etc. And if they say no, then they won't sleep over, but they'll come to Minyan, then it's on their head, it's their decision.
Okay, good, we're getting there. We haven't gotten there yet. We're on our way to that point. We haven't gotten to that point yet. So far what we've said is that for this Avera, if they ever listen to Mechshol, that would not be necessary. Even if you didn't invite them to stay over, it would be okay because I'm not enabling them to do the Avera because they could do it without me.
Wait.
We gotta wait till I finish. Then we can develop it. The problem is there's another issue besides this issue of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol, besides the issue of enabling someone to do an Avera, there's also encouraging someone to do an Avera. That's a different problem. There's two different things. One is enabling. That's what we just learned about. And enabling is not a problem if they could do it without me. But then there's encouraging. You can't encourage someone to do an Avera, even if you're not enabling. They could do it all by themselves. But you can't encourage them. You can't give them support to do an Avera. That you can't do, even if you're not enabling. So, for example, if a person tells you that they're not religious, and they're telling you that they intend to go to drive to the game on Shabbos, you can't be encouraging of that practice. You can't joke around with them about it and say, oh, that's great, maybe you'll tell me the score after Shabbos. You can't do that, because you can't encourage them to do an Avera. You're not enabling in that case, they're doing it anyway. But you can't encourage them to do an Avera either. You can't make them feel good about doing the Avera. You don't have to. You don't have to wag your finger at them, but you still can't make them feel good about it. You can't pretend like it's perfectly fine for you to do it because you're not religious. You can't do that. So the problem with inviting someone, and we'll get to your case, the problem with inviting someone for Shabbos, even though they could have driven anyway, the problem is that you're encouraging the driving on Shabbos.
No.
That's the issue. Wait.
That's
I didn't get to that yet. Hold on. I'm talking about on Shabbos.
Yeah,
on Shabbos.
Right.
On Shabbos, the problem is it's encouraging the driving. That's the problem. It's not enabling, but it's encouraging, which is a different issue. So what Mrs. Lawrence is saying is that one way to get around the issue is invite them to come before Shabbos, like for Minyan, or if you're inviting them for the meal, invite them to come to light candles and be with you for Shabbos, and then provide, say to them that, you know, you can certainly sleep over, stay with us for the entire Shabbos, you're certainly welcome to do so. If they choose to leave, that's their business. You're not throwing them out of the house. You're saying, listen, you're welcome to stay with us. Find you a place to stay in the neighborhood, and you can stay the entire Shabbos. If the person wants to leave, that's not your encouraging, that's not your enabling, that's perfectly fine. So the best way to invite someone who is not yet religious for Shabbos is to invite them prior to the start of Shabbos, to come prior to the start of Shabbos, and tell them that they are welcome to stay the entire Shabbos. Now, the fact of the matter is that here, certainly in our shul, we have people who come to shul on Shabbos day, and they drive to shul, they come to shul, and once they're in shul, so we invite them for meals. So that's perfectly acceptable because we didn't ask them to come to shul. We didn't say, come to shul and then I'll invite you for a meal. They came to shul, they're here anyway. They're making their own decisions. So once they're here, so there's no reason not to invite them for a meal. There's nothing wrong with that. We like them, they're good people, they're friends of ours. So there's no reason not to invite them. But we have to be careful not to encourage the practice of desecrating Shabbos. That's what we have to be very careful of, not to encourage it, not to applaud the transgressing of Shabbos. That's where a person has to be careful. Yeah?
If you ask somebody if they're going to shul on Shabbos, you know, going to Shabbos, and they say yes, and then you say, would you like to come to us for lunch afterwards?
Yeah.
Because this way, you know, and you have a little heads up, because you're not asking them to come.
You know, that depends. It's a little bit of a gray area. Because it depends, you know, if they regularly come to shul, so then you're not really encouraging the practice. They're doing it anyway.
Right.
So you're really just asking, are you in town?
Are they coming for a bar mitzvah?
Right. That's, you know, depends on whether what you're saying is really asking them to do it or not. And so we're not going to be able to cover every eventuality in this class, but you get the idea. The point is not to encourage the practice of transgressing Shabbos. That's the thing we're trying to be careful of. But again, what we just read here in Pasuk Yudal verse 14 is enabling. And enabling only applies when they wouldn't have done it otherwise, when they couldn't have done it otherwise, it was difficult to do it otherwise, and I enabled it. That's a fairly rare case. Encouraging is more common, and we have to be very careful about that. That's where it's easy to transgress, to encourage someone to do something which is not appropriate. Yeah?
So Rabbi Kransky, when you're talking about this issue, you're talking about the person and yourself. What about the person who is deaf, who cannot hear? What is the involvement of that person as opposed to the person who's saying something he shouldn't be saying? The person who is saying something to that person who can't hear is obviously doing the wrong thing, and he, you know, for his own self-respect, for Kiddush Hashem, he shouldn't be doing that. But is he hurting the feeling of the person who can't hear?
Well, if the person...
What is the reason...
For not cursing him?
Why it says you should not say something like that to a person who can't hear.
Because the Torah is saying that it is inherently wrong to curse a fellow Jew, even if they can't hear you.
Oh, so this is not specifically... I mean, of course you shouldn't do anything to anybody that's wrong, but they specifically mention this, but it's not limited.
Correct.
So this is just an example.
Yeah.
If you shouldn't say something to somebody who can't hear, then for sure you shouldn't say it to somebody who could hear.
Right. I mean, you could have argued the other way around. You could have argued that it's worse to do it to someone who can't hear because they can't defend themselves. If you say it to someone who can hear,
that's what I wanted.
They could argue back. So right. But there is another pasuk later. There's another pasuk later in the Torah that says, "Lo sa'or, don't curse, even." Even someone who can hear. So both ways, we really have a commandment both ways.
Okay, but that's what I needed to hear. Yeah. That the person who can't hear can't defend himself. Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah.
That's very important. Thank you.
So someone who has passed away will fall under that statute.
Okay, there is a discussion whether it is prohibited to curse someone who has passed away. Typically, people become more concerned over saying things about the dead than they do about live people. Really, it should be the other way around, right? Because with a live person, you're dealing with the person's feelings, and it's you can really, you know, you create machlokas and fighting, and you know, with live people, with a person who's passed away, so first of all, they can't hear you. Second of all, they're not going to fight with you. Third of all, they're in the next world and they are in a totally different place and they see things far differently than we do. Yeah. So, but people tend to get nervous when it comes to the people who passed away. Right? So there is a debate whether it is an avera or not to curse someone who has passed away. But regardless, it's worse to curse someone who's alive.
I was taught that you're not supposed to say anything negative about somebody who passed away because it puts them on a lower madriga, as opposed to also saying good things about somebody who, you know, was nifter, it puts them on a higher madriga. So, you know, the cursing is the same thing. It's something negative. You don't want them to go.
Yes.
You know, even if you didn't like them, you don't want any, you know, Hashem's wrath to, you know, to turn to you.
That's right.
From them.
You're absolutely right. But it's still worse. But it's still worse to do it to a live person.
Yes.
And
yes.
But we tend to be much more nervous about someone who passed away, because when you deal with death, so then already, you know, people get nervous and people think about their own death. So, you know, so we don't want to go there. We don't want to get involved with the dead. It's a spooky kind of thing. But it's really worse to curse someone who's alive.
Yeah. How about if a person is really evil?
Now that's different. All these halachos are not talking about someone who's truly evil.
Right.
Now you have to be careful.
Right, who's to say? Yeah.
You have to be careful about giving that label to somebody.
Yeah, yeah,
that's a danger. It's it's very easy to just say, oh, that person's a Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very easy to say that. You got to be very careful, because if you're wrong about it, you can really mess up.
Right.
But if the person is genuinely a Rasha, and that is a clear definition of what a Rasha is, a person is definitely a Rasha, then these halachos would not apply. Then one is allowed to curse them, one is allowed to take revenge, one is allowed to bear a grudge. All these halachos would not apply to someone who is a genuine Rasha. But
right.
Most people not a genuine Rasha.
What is genuine?
So the Chafetz Chaim, in discussing Lashon Hara, discusses the definition of a genuine Rasha. And the question is whether, how easy it is for a person to fall into that category today is questionable. It would have to be that the person does an Avera regularly, that they know is an Avera, that they know most people know is an Avera, that they have been told or been asked to stop doing it, and they have dismissed the warnings and do it anyway, don't care. But and it has to be something which people consider to be a severe avera. So clearly, if a person is a murderer, they're a Rasha. Right? That's obvious. But
of Hitler.
Okay, yeah, but he's not even a Jew. He's for sure a Russian, right?
Yeah.
But even every time you hear about a Jew, a fellow Jew, so for example, the Chafetz Chaim says Lashon Hara is a very bad avera, but most people don't consider it to be a bad avera. Therefore, if a person regularly speaks Lashon Hara, they would not be categorized as a Russia, even though they're doing a bad avera regularly, because people don't think of it as a bad avera. It has to be a person is doing something which people, including that person, knows is a bad avera, And they do it anyway. They do it publicly. They don't care. People tell them stop. They don't care. They do it anyway. So the question is, how many things do we have like that today? It's hard to think of it. It would have to be someone who knows better.
George Soros.
What?
George Soros. No, I heard an interview just recently. He knowingly knows what he's doing. He is a Jew, raised by a Nazi, had no problem going along with this Nazi who raised him, knew what he was doing. And they asked him, don't you have any feeling about any? No. And okay. He still continues to control areas, be a raging anti-Semite, anti-Zionist, I think anti-American.
Okay. So then, you know, it could be that person.
When I heard the comments and all, I thought, is it possible to be born without a soul?
The Gemara says, a Jew who gives over his fellow Jews to be, you know, to anti-Semites, gives over his fellow Jews to anti-Semites, would be a Rasha. But what I'm trying to say is it's a limited category. It's not like we have, you know, a bunch of them living with us. It's very limited. That category does exist, but it is a limited category. It's a limited category. To fall into that category, a person really has to be truly evil. But if they would be, then these halachas would not apply to them. Then all these mitzvahs. There's no mitzvah of there's no mitzvah of love him like yourself. On a Russia. All these halachas do not apply to a real Russia, to an evil person. Okay, we're going to stop here. I know it's a little early, and I'm sorry, and I also know that it's our first class back.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.